The Darkest Chapter in Numbers. Hi, this is Darko Stefanovic from Walla Walla University School of Theology. Welcome to Good Word, our weekly radio program that focuses on biblical topics and discussions. Today we continue a series of topics based on one of the less known books of the Bible, the Book of Numbers. And to help me explore this challenging book, I have here two guests with me, Dr. Paul Dibdahl, Professor of Religion here at Walla Walla University, and Dr. Kyle Craig, Professor of Chemistry at the same school. Gentlemen, thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And for today, we have chapter 20 of the Book of Numbers. So in this chapter, we have a report on a very serious mistake made by Moses and his brother Aaron and the punishment that they received. So why do we say that chapter 20 is the darkest chapter? What do we find the beginning of the chapter, and how does the chapter end? Would someone remind us of that? Because the mistake by Moses and Aaron is found in the heart of the chapter. But what's in the beginning and what's at the end?
Miriam dies at the very beginning.
In the beginning. And at the end?
Aaron dies at the end.
Now, that's two out of three siblings. And in between, we have Aaron and Moses making a mistake, and the consequences will be Moses is told that he will die without actually going into the promised land.
That probably stung real bad, too, after all those years of wandering and wanting to get there, and now he's told he won't.
Yes. As we focus on especially verses 6 through 11, what God told Moses and Aaron, and this is what he said, take the staff, you and your brother Aaron, gather the assembly together, speak to that rock before their eyes, and it will pour out its water. You will bring water out of the rock for the community so that their livestock can drink, and they as well. What did Moses and Aaron do right at Kadesh? Kadesh means holy. That's what the place was named, because God proved himself holy and faithful before the people who rebelled against him. So Moses and Aaron are challenged one more time by the people. What was there anything right that they did?
They went and asked God what to do.
And that was the best thing they could do.
They sought the Lord, and they followed the initial part of his instruction, which was to gather the people together, and that's what they did.
Was there a danger that people could misunderstand the role that these two brothers played and think that actually Moses and Aaron brought them out of Egypt? And yet, the Pentateuch makes it clear that it was the Lord who brought the Israelites out of Egypt, right? Mm-hmm. And Moses and Aaron were his instruments. So the ultimate focus was not on the two of them, but on the Lord. So that's what they did right. Now, what wrong did they do?
Well, just to take your statement and,
yes, please,
and you know, just turn a little bit. It said you're mentioning that the danger was that the people would think that Moses and Aaron brought them out of Egypt rather than God. If you look in verse 10, listen, you rebels, must who? We bring water out of this rock. So he's saying, look, we'll bring you water out of this, rather than saying God is going to bring this water for you.
First of all, they were not supposed to speak to the people. Are we right on this? They were supposed to speak to the rock. But they spoke to the people, and in doing so, they also turned attention to themselves.
Oh, and the way they addressed the people, listen, you rebels. There's emotion here as well. I think there's anger and frustration, which is understandable, but it's stepping beyond what the Lord had asked them to do.
Yeah. And it's so easy when we face anger to respond in the kind.
And I think that what they seem to have done here, not just the people perhaps attributing too much power and authority to Moses and to Aaron, but Moses and Aaron, it seems, also begin to assume that somehow the power for these things is inherent within themselves. I think that's a danger that we all face. Anyone who's spoken, preached, given some kind of religious lecture before people, if you feel like it goes well, very quickly you begin to think in your own mind, wow, I can do this. All these people listening to me and they like what I'm saying. We begin to assume things that are very dangerous.
I would even argue that it doesn't have to be a religious
lecture, because
you know, some days I'll give what I think is an amazing lecture in class, and then the next time I get up and talk to the students, I'm downright terrible in my own mind, you know. So it's kind of like, you know, anytime you take any of your own glory.
Yeah.
Could I propose the following, that it's not just Moses and Aaron, but even the staff or the stick, the rod, assumed a lot of importance. And as you say, like our knowledge or our money or anything that we use that may be used in a negative sense as well, becomes suddenly so important.
Yeah, that God can't work except through this object or this
through
thing.
This rod.
It almost sounds like thou shalt have no other gods before me. This is the God before God, this rod.
Yeah. And they made use of that rod of God. Mm-hmm. Because Moses used it to strike the rock, and he was not supposed to do that. And he didn't do it once.
Twice.
But twice. Yeah.
So he was pretty annoyed.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And maybe we were going to come to this anyway, but just in case we weren't. To me, one of the beautiful things about this is how God responds. In that public setting with everyone gathered, he doesn't embarrass Moses and Aaron. Mm-hmm. Because obviously, they couldn't bring water from the rock, so they could have struck the rock as many times as they wanted to, and God could have said, well, here's a lesson for you. Mm-hmm. The rock is still dry and
embarrass
still
him publicly.
But he saves, there's a sense in which he graciously saves Moses the embarrassment of making this big production and striking the rock, and nothing happens. Water comes, the thirsty people are blessed through that. But then the Lord comes to Moses afterwards and says, because of that, you know, here's the penalty which will be paid. But even in the punishment, you can see the compassion of God for his servant Moses. I like that
very
much.
I think there's a lesson in that for us as well, because sometimes we, you know, when someone does something wrong to us, our first tendency is to call them out publicly rather than just, you know, let the situation play out and then privately say, hey, that was not real cool.
Mm-hmm. Now, when God described himself, his essence to Moses in Exodus 34, this is how he did it. The Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands and forgiving wickedness, rebellion, and sin. He introduced himself in this way. And by the way, for our listeners who have read the Quran, these are the opening words as well that one can read. Was God too harsh when he punished Moses? If God is truly all compassionate, gracious, and merciful, can we say that he was harsh in punishing Moses just because of this mistake?
I would say no, he wasn't too harsh. Because of what happens later in the story.
And that is our next question. Based on what is said about Moses in the rest of the Bible, was Moses in the end punished or rewarded?
I'd say he got a better reward.
Even before he died, and I know many of our listeners will know the story of Moses encamped right there at the edge of the Promised Land, and he climbs up the mountain. And he looks over the land. He can see it all the way to the distant sea. And the Lord says, here it is. You know, you've brought the people here. This is the Promised Land, which I'm going to give to them. And even though Moses certainly would have wanted to go in, I think that he could have looked over that land with a great sense of relief that indeed the people are there. They will cross over. So I think he could have died with some peace even with that. But then the real good news comes.
And what is that good news? What do we learn from the rest of the Bible, Kyle?
Well, that he died, but then he is allowed to go to heaven.
He was resurrected.
Yeah, pretty much right after. Hmm. Well, maybe it wasn't, but it seems the way.
We learn about that from the Gospels, where we see Moses appearing to Christ on the Mount of Transfiguration. and also from Jude.
Jude,
there is
right.
a text that is somewhat obscure.
Yeah, about Michael arguing with the devil over the body
Moses
of
Moses.
Yes,
body of Moses.
That's right. So we do have these texts that talk about it.
So that argument, was that argument about this, do you think? Just sort of as a sort of a tangential question, do you think the devil and Michael, who we understand to be Christ, arguing mm-hmm. over, were they arguing over this experience? Mm-hmm. And the devil was saying, look, he really messed up there.
Being the accuser, that was not difficult for him to present one more accusation against a child of God to yeah. keep him subject to death. Now, in reading Exodus 34, I skipped the last sentence.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that is very often overlooked when we talk about the dynamics relationship between justice and mercy. Yet he, that is Yahweh, the Lord, does not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes the children and their children for the sin of the fathers to the third and fourth generation. And in our terms today, we would understand this as the consequences mm-hmm. of the parents' action, unfortunately, very often are reflected sure. also, you know, on the children and so on. So God balances the two, but why is it so hard for humans to balance mercy with justice?
I just read a while back about, and I forget the technical term for this, but humans are not good at reciprocating equally. They have examples of people, you know, if I push you and then you're told, now push me back just as hard as I pushed you. Humans don't judge that well. They will usually, they will overcompensate. They will push back harder thinking that it's an equal response. And I think this applies in all areas. It's very difficult for us to truly be just with other people. We retaliate beyond what we ought to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of at an elementary level, but I think it's very difficult for us to be just, and I think it's very difficult for us to be merciful
mm-hmm.
Because we don't, I think it's because we don't love fully.
Mm-hmm. Are there people who have difficulty in exercising discipline because they are all on the side of mercy and grace? Is there a danger there too?
Yeah, there can be.
Kyle is a parent, child parent, and parent to be. So I'm not sure you
don't
have something to say.
Don't discipline the child, Kyle. Just let it grow up. And not such good advice, though. Actually.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Especially when you have a hyperactive little 2-year-old.
So shall we conclude from today's discussion that obedience matters to God? I would like to thank both of my guests, Paul Dibdahl and Kyle Craig, for their contribution to the discussion today. And also I would like to thank Suzanne Michael, our faithful and committed radio technician, for helping us today. Please join us next week as we continue to explore the messages from the biblical book of Numbers. I would like to thank all of you for tuning in today. For Good Word, I'm Zdravko Stefanovic.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.